Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, NFL Week 15 here on Thursday, December 15th. Powered by Bet Online, and we fight through a little bit of adversity here. We don't take days off like the Cleveland Cavaliers, Payne. It's all about bringing the A game every time we get together.
Yeah, sounds like it's a little bit rougher for you this morning than it is for me.
Yeah, the voice is not quite...
We'll make it work. It's late in the season.
Yeah, the voice is not quite at 100%, but that won't dissuade anybody from taking our advice or getting the best quality information. If there's some coughing and wheezing throughout, I fully expect you to make fun of me, take some shots. We can do whatever we need to try and make this happen. But before we get into everything NFL Week 15, Payne, wanted to get your takeaway on the stuff that we saw Monday night. One of the better Monday Night Football games. Probably an unusual scoreline given the way that that game transpired. Injuries to Baltimore. But I think everybody who had the Ravens and bet them plus 7.5 early in the week had to feel pretty fortunate being able to go to the window and cash that ticket.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Two fumbles, two offensive touchdowns. One, I believe, went a handful of yards. The other one about 20 yards. So very fortunate if you had the Baltimore Ravens for Monday Night Football. And I think what we really saw was the New England Patriots on national TV in a game that they had a lot to play for in terms of their perception, I think. And we saw Psycho Tom out there. This game, you could tell, meant a little more to them. A lot of injuries, a lot of question marks, people questioning them in the media, how good they were. And I think we really saw their A game despite, you know, a lot of weapons were out. I think they only had four healthy active wide receivers. We saw Chris Hogan early on in that game. Wow, a big scare there. Thought he had a hand injury. It was just a dislocated finger, quickly back out once it was popped in. But I think that's going to be the key moving forward, a little bit of Chris Hogan.
When you watch this Patriots offense in 2016, you mentioned Tom Brady playing with a chip on his shoulder. Do you feel they're capable of masking some of the deficiencies that clearly this defense has as they've been susceptible to big plays? Although I will say one thing, I was actually impressed for the way New England played on that side of the ball defensively, at least through the first half, and for large stretches when they weren't faced with short fields against them.
The defense showed improvements, yes. I thought they were pretty good against the run. I thought they were pretty good against the pass. A couple short field touchdowns. They really showed some progression on that side. You have to question. Now, I've been banging the table telling you this Baltimore offense has to improve, but it's not an elite offense by any stretch. So maybe it was a little bit of the competition too. Flacco wasn't great. Good in comeback mode. Very fortunate, not just from that perspective, but also Brady kind of losing his mind a little bit there, throwing the pick at halftime. You get a touchdown there, even a field goal to take it from two scores to three scores, that game's likely over.
Yeah, I know what the future odds say for at Bet Online. The Patriots are the odds-on favorite. Do you agree that they're the team to beat right now, not only in the AFC, but in all of the National Football League?
I want to say yes, because we've seen them do it. I know what to expect. The one thing I like about them is they can kind of do what they need to do based on opponent. They can run, they can pass, they have that ability to change their game plan week to week to really exploit a defensive efficiency of the opposing team. Now, Pittsburgh is a very interesting hurdle that they potentially have to hop. They deserve to be the favorites, but they're going to be in some questionable games. I think Pittsburgh gives them a tough time. And I think Seattle, even with their late season defensive woes, can give them some trouble.
Now, when we look at Baltimore on the other side, we know Jimmy Smith was lost in that game, and the Ravens have been very quiet about the severity of that injury, we know he won't play this week against Philadelphia. If he's out for an extended period of time, clearly that defense doesn't function at the high level we've grown accustomed to. But you look at Baltimore's remaining schedule, home this weekend against the Eagles and then two road games in the division. I don't want to say that the Ravens are dead and buried, but in your mind, chance this team makes the playoffs, or do we think that Baltimore's season will come to an end in early January?
I think 10 wins is going to get you in. I do. So they're going to have to win all three. We saw their playoff percentages drop considerably. I think they went from over a 50% chance to make the playoffs. Now you're looking at, you know, low 30 percentile chance based upon the projected point spreads. So this, again, they're in another spot where this game is very meaningful. Great home field advantage against Philadelphia. You can lean on that defense a little bit, especially against a young Wentz. But Jimmy Smith, I will say this. He's a good cornerback. He's a solid cornerback. I think his value is far superior to what he is talent-wise. That is a spot on that roster that is just paper thin, and you can't afford Jimmy Smith being out. So it's going to create some issues, I think, for that defense a little bit.
Just in terms of, you mean his value, that just because there's nobody else on that roster capable of filling that role and just such limited depth that all of a sudden it just gets much more pronounced when he's not on the field?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about the value of a player all the time. And you could have, let's say, an average to an above average player like Jimmy Smith. That's kind of what he's graded out to be this season at cornerback, in and out of the lineup, dealing with some injuries, playing through some injuries. So he's probably better than that overall. But you can have an above average player be more valuable to a team because the drop off behind him's just so drastic, as opposed to saying, you know, I have Tom Brady and his backup is, you know, Drew Brees. It's not that big of a drop off value wise. So it's always important when you're talking about the NFL, a league where one play and a top guy's out. It's all about depth. Thin teams have a tough time, especially this late in the season.
It's always difficult. I mean, we talk about it, you know, year in, year out in the National Football League. It may not be the best team that actually wins a Super Bowl, but it's the team that's the healthiest when they need to be going into that stretch drive. And, of course, we'll talk about some of the biggest games with major playoff implications today as we look at everything that will unfold over the next 3 weeks. The American Gaming will bring you your big game breakdown, not only for tonight's Seahawks-Rams showdown, and I use the term showdown rather loosely, but of course the Saturday primetime game between the Dolphins and Jets. However, before we get there, time to head out to Parts Unknown as we welcome in our weekly contributor here on the Bet the Board podcast, Dave Mason. You can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. And Dave, I know it's been a frustrating season so far for you guys in the National Football League. Please tell me that didn't continue during last weekend.
It did continue. it was a winner for the players again. I mean, geez, this NFL season, it's been a grind. But yeah, the players were on the plus side this past weekend. They won. Big winners were Steelers, Bengals, Falcons, Vikings. House, we won the Buccaneers and a little bit on the Giants. But yeah, I don't know what's going on here, but who knows what's going on. I think it's just one of those seasons, I think, where everything's falling the players' way. So thinking back, I mean, we've had, I think, two really big weekends for the house, and, you know, and a lot of chop and a couple big losses for the players. But I can only remember two or three really, really big weekends for the house, NFL. So
it feels like there's been a lot of road favorites, especially, you know, very public, high-profile teams that are getting to the window. We know that's never good for the house, and I'm sure we're starting to see that trend develop this weekend as well. But before we get there, what have you guys seen early goings as far as college football action? We know a lot of these bowl games, some of the big ones, and even some of the secondary bowls have all been on the move.
Yeah, action's been great so far. You know, the bowls start out this Saturday. We already see a little bit of sharp action this Saturday with Southern Miss -4. That's -1.5 right now. A little bit on New Mexico -7. That's -7.5. Tons of action on the two playoff games in a couple weeks. The Ohio State Clemson game, that's about 50-50. That opened Ohio State -2.5. That's up to -3.5, but the action's about 50-50. And Alabama Bama is currently minus 15, and they're getting pounded about 5% of the actions on out for Washington. So, but yeah, I mean, how many bowl this year? Like 41. Seems like there's more and more of a year, but early action is great.
Dave, as we transition to week 15 NFL, you talk about the public killing you last weekend, and for the last month or so, what sides are you going to have to dodge this week from the public?
Well, as Todd said, the road chalk. Everybody's on the road chalk again. Steelers are usually play. 92% of the early bets are on the Steelers at Cincinnati. Patriots, again, 90% of the early bets are on the Patriots at Denver. And the Raiders, once again, they've turned into a public team as 90% of the early bets are on the Raiders at San Diego. So, yeah, we'll be room for those home underdogs once again.
Have you guys seen any professional money maybe on any of those particular games or on other matchups that may help offset some of that liability?
Not those games, not yet. A little bit of sharp action on the Skins, -5, -5.5. Actually, -6 as well. That's now -6.5. The Bears got some sharp action on that, +6.5 and +6. That's now +5.5. Rest of the sharp action will come in, you know, Friday and Saturday.
And as far as folks looking to get into the action at Bet Online and or reload just in time for the holidays, what kind of promotions can they expect at the shop?
If you do not have a BetOnline account, head over to BetOnline.ag and sign up and use promo code 75BTB for a 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a BetOnline account and you have not used the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload bonus. The max bonus on either of those is $1,000, so you can get a lot of money in your account for this weekend's games. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
Dave, always great getting your perspective, and I know Payne and I will be rooting for some home underdogs. That way we'll get you on here next week. Get that energy, a little bit of excitement, and hope that we've heard about one of the more profitable weeks the house has seen over the last month or so in the National Football League. Thanks as always.
All right. See you next week. Take care, guys.
Payne, I'm starting to get a little bit more worried with each passing week about our friend Dave Mason. All these public road favorites, it has not been a good season, at least through 14 weeks, for the men on the other side of the counter.
I don't feel bad for him. I don't. And I don't think our listeners should feel bad for him either. Strike while the iron's hot. Pounce on him. Bury him. You know, that's kind of my philosophy. And he alluded to some of those road favorites with inflated prices hurting them a little bit. They hurt me personally a little bit last week too. Went to the window with a Browns ticket, thought 6 was a good number, closed off 4, and that just didn't work out very well. So I think the Rams game as well. I won't be gloating about getting 7 there, having information on Julio Jones before just about anybody at closing 4 and not even sniffing. So those were two of my losers last week as well.
Yeah, it's been a real weird season when you look at some of the has versus the have-nots and the way that these teams have unraveled late in games. Again, as Dave mentioned, interesting scenario starting to brew this week. A lot of road favorites and some high-profile teams. Weather, though, very much in the forecast. And we didn't talk about that early on the pod. Payne, when you go through your process of handicapping games, how often are you checking weather? You're looking Thursday, you're looking Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, or you just kind of handicap the game, and then you're checking weather the day of or before you're clicking any of your bets?
I think this is a good teaching point because we talked about this a little bit last week with the Packers game. And one thing I can tell you, and it's pretty funny, is, you know, some of the best weather forecasters in the world become the best because they project weather accurately 30% of the time. So I'm not going to pretend to be that guy.
Well, that'll get you into Cooperstown, though. If you're right 30% of the time, that'll get you into Cooperstown.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say this. There's checking weather, and then there's checking weather. And I do the latter. So this time of year, it's a full-time job, checking weather. And I'm being completely honest and serious with you. If I check the weather in a game now, it's weather. It can change hourly. Hell, it could even change by the minute. So that's something you're going to want to do, and I think that's what we saw last week. And I kind of, again, touched on it and kind of, you know, busting the balls of the guys at ESPN there and talked about Packers, Redskins the week before where they're talking about all this crazy wind and they're showing a flag 15 feet above the stadium whipping around. And we saw that with the Packers game this past week against Seattle. I'm watching Britt McHenry at 8 in the morning in a blizzard. What's 8 in the morning? Not 4:30 in the afternoon. And that game, based on weather and based on what everybody's watching on their television, goes down to as low as 44. And I know there was some sharp money going under 45, but that was kind of to get a good number there. And you saw this skyrocket with no real weather. That's one thing that you want to monitor. So it's literally, I'm checking it every hour for 72 hours before the game. And we're going to have some situations where we talk about this today. And again, I know before we hopped on here, you were watching like ESPN. I'm literally looking at like three different places because, again, not everybody has the same feeling on the projection. So I like to get a couple different viewpoints. I like to look at a radar, see if it's coming in. And there's a lot of things that you need to be cognizant of weather because it does present a ton of value. And I think this might be one of those weeks.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I mean, coming from a professional perspective, and you talk about presenting some value, do you feel that oftentimes some of these stories and narratives get overblown and there's actually a better chance to go over some of these lower totals or take full advantage of the weather that doesn't materialize? You mentioned Seattle and Green Bay last week. We're seeing it already in this Packers game right now. Bet Online down to 39.5 for Green Bay's trip to Chicago. We're sitting here recording this podcast on a Thursday. I know the weather forecast says 17 below with wind chill 2 degrees, but who knows what's going to unfold come kickoff.
I would say it's probably pretty accurate. This is kind of the thing for me, and I'm not going to like speak for players, and I'm not going to like relive my high school days and talk about how I was the greatest middle linebacker ever at 5'8". But what I'm going to tell you is what I'm going to say to you is, if there's no wind, the cold to me does not benefit defense. Because I remember when I hit somebody and it was cold, I didn't want to hit anybody. The defense is really the guys that are laying these licks on people. And so to me, that's more beneficial to offense. But the one thing with this specific game is, and why we've seen the side steam as well towards the Bears, lingering issues with Aaron Rodgers. The hamstring, the calf, there's strains, there's pulls, and all of a sudden you're playing in the weather that you alluded to, cold weather. It's going to be tough to loosen those up. And so when you talk about potentially having Aaron Rodgers with no mobility, just having to sit in the pocket, it certainly limits the offense, and we've seen that. But, again, no wind. You're talking a Packer total at 39. Alshon Jeffrey looks like he's coming back. He's in shape. It's an interesting total.
Yeah, a little bit more difficult to loosen up some of those lower body extremities when you're talking about sub-zero temperatures, but not a game I want to spend a ton of time with, so may as well transition to a game that does have some injury concerns in its own right for the Detroit Lions, a team that obviously controls its own destiny within the NFC, but a very difficult upcoming schedule that'll start this week with a trip to MetLife Stadium to take on the Giants, followed up by a primetime game next week against the Dallas Cowboys, and then a game to close the regular season against the aforementioned Green Bay Packers. You're looking at the Giants, a 4-point favorite at BetOnline, lay $1.05 on the favorite. This total has seen some movement, now down to 41. We saw the Giants on Sunday night. Defensively, that's kind of been their calling card, offense hit or miss. But I guess we have to start this discussion with the injury to Matt Stafford and how torn ligaments in his hand will impact the Lions' passing game going forward.
Yeah, Stafford claims it's not going to be a big deal. I think otherwise. I was watching him during the Bears game, and he went with like the Michael Jackson like double glove, and he's whipping off the second glove. It clearly is going to affect him. It's his middle finger on his throwing hand. It literally is like your grip finger. So that's going to be a struggle for him. I will tell you this. There's going to be two games at MetLife Stadium. The Sunday one at time of this recording, Thursday morning. The Sunday one at 1 o'clock appears to have more of the weather. You're talking 12 to 14 mile per hour winds. You're talking, you know, 100% chance at this current time of snow. And then you talk about the Stafford finger. You talk about the potential of Darius Slay being able to match up Beckham one-on-one on an island. And we've seen when Beckham isn't going, the offense really isn't going. The Lions defense getting a little bit better the last few weeks, getting DeAndre Levy healthy. He's been fantastic for them. And the other thing here is when you talk about the Lions offense, not just Matthew Stafford, but one of the key cogs to that offense was Theo Riddick out of the backfield, matched up on a linebacker. He missed last week against the Bears. He hasn't practiced yet this week. That's kind of the one weak spot for that Giants defense. Fantastic up front, very good in the back. It's their linebacking core that has some potential question marks. And without Theo Riddick there in the flat, potentially, that's a big loss. It's really all these factors, Stafford's finger, the weather, Darius Slay being able to match up, Lions defense getting better. We know the Giants, their defense is fantastic. This is the reason why this opened 44. You're now down to as low as 40.5.
I'm going to say I don't think Detroit is obviously a threat to win the NFC. Not really going out on a limb there, despite the fact they could have home field advantage or something close to it throughout the NFC playoffs, at least as the number two seed. When we look at the Giants, Payne, Sunday night's performance, I know we talked about it a little greater detail on Monday. Is this team a legitimate, viable threat to come out of the NFC based on the strength of that defense?
The defense is fantastic. I think we're going to need to see how severe the JPP injury is, because when you have two guys, right now Olivier Vernon's just wreaking havoc. Like, he's an absolute beast. He requires a double team. And that's the reason why JPP is having this quote unquote breakout season, because when you have a guy that can attract two linemen or attract a back, literally the three other guys in that line, just one of them needs to win their one-on-one matchup to get to the quarterback. So without JPP there, the defense does take a step back just a little bit. But I think, you know, at home with that defense, there's some potential there. I will tell you, Eli needs to play better. Watching the Giants win that game straight up as a 4-point dog with how bad Eli played. I mean, Eli made one throw the entire night.
He treated that football like a hand grenade almost from start to finish.
This isn't news. I mean, true. This is Eli. Eli exactly. Is a turnover waiting to happen. He does not like contact. I mean, just watch any time contact is in the guy's face. He flops on the ground. He wants no part of it. He closes his eyes. Like, it's bad. Like, this guy is going to, because he's a nice guy, because he's a Manning, because the defense won him two Super Bowls, is going to get into the Hall of Fame. And the New York media is going to loves him and is going to put him in there. He's not a Hall of Famer. I'm sorry. He's not very good. You look at all the metrics this season, he's literally, of all the qualifying quarterbacks, one of the seven worst quarterbacks in the NFL this year. It's trending towards not quite as bad as what we saw from Peyton Manning last year.
It is, I will say, watching Eli, even if you have a bet on the Giants or against, you sit there and cringe because you're not exactly sure what you're going to get from him on a week-to-week basis. But you mentioned the defense, and that really has become the Giants' calling card, and I think what they'll have to lean on if this team is going to be able to make a deep run into January and threaten for the NFC. AFC playoff picture in Kansas City, another game with frigid weather expected in the forecast, where the Chiefs come off of an extended rest after the Thursday night victory against the Oakland Raiders. They're 5-point favorites at BetOnline, lay $1.05 to back the chalk. Seen some movement towards the under here, number down to 42. I guess, Payne, when we look at these two teams, Kansas City, can they exploit the Titans' weakness, which is their secondary? And on the flip side, can the Titans' run-heavy offense exploit Kansas City's soft interior rush defense?
That's exactly what this game's going to come down to. We talked about this Chiefs offense potentially getting better with Tyreek Hill, Kelce, Macklin back, and that's really where they're going to have to be a force. You look at this Titans secondary, they are improving. They really are. They've gotten better the last few weeks. Believe they're only allowing like 58% completion percentage the last 3 weeks, but this season as a whole, the Titans have allowed 47% of pass plays to be successful. That's 21st in the NFL. So that is where the Titans are going to have to attack. Good matchups for both these teams. We've talked about the Chiefs not being able to stop the run all season. They've allowed 50% of runs to be successful. It's 27th in the NFL. They allow 4.3 yards per rush attempt. Now you have no Derek Johnson in the middle. You lost your starting defensive tackle at the beginning of the month in Jay Howard. It's going to be tough sledding. So when you look at this, it is your quote-unquote playoff game. Kansas City fighting for the division, fighting for home field throughout. Tennessee needs to get back into the division race. They can win their division. So this is that playoff-like atmosphere. We talked about Arrowhead last week when we broke down the Raiders game for Thursday Night Football and how games trend there under. I will tell you, I think 41's a little short here when you talk about both teams having potentially very, very good matchups against the opposing defenses.
I know we all do our reading when it comes to the NFL, especially this late in the season. How much do you make of the story Marcus Mariota talking about never having played in a game, or at least recalling at any point in his career, a game colder than 40 degrees? The Hawaii native, we're talking weather again in this one. Maybe, you know, 15 to 20 degrees is what the expectation is at Arrowhead for this one.
I think it's going to be even colder. Right now, I am seeing 9 degrees, and that's without the wind chill. This could be a negative degree game with the wind chill. And I think that's kind of, I was going to actually hold that little nugget there when we got to the Dolphins game. But it's always an interesting question, because for him specifically, I think it matters a little bit. And we talk about this all the time. Let's just say, you know, you're a Southern Cal kid. You grow up.
Well, you're not gonna pick on the soft West Coast.
No. I'm saying,
are you?
Listen to where I'm going. All right. You grow up. You're in Southern California. You go play for USC. You've never played in the cold weather. Suddenly, you know, you take your trip to Notre Dame, and it's freezing. I think there's an impact there. There's no doubt about it. But where we get some question marks is, and I didn't want to bring this up until the Dolphins game, where we get this perception of Miami team traveling to cold weather. Like, the reality is, yes, the team's located in Miami, or located, you know, it's Oregon, located out west. But these players are drafted here. Some of them were born in cold weather states. Some of them played in college cold weather states. Like, the question mark is someone specific that's an integral part to the team, specifically Marcus Mariota. And that's where it's going to have your effect. So I think this does affect him. I will say this, though. You know, the Chiefs are winning games. They're doing it. They're winning games. Still don't love Mike Mularkey. There's a coaching mismatch here. There has been some very sharp money on Tennessee, despite the Marcus Mariota stuff.
It should be an interesting game to try and see where this number trends. I mean, open 6 some shops, got as low as 5, and then it's come back up. You can still shop around. Most of the Vegas books, 5.5, and as we mentioned, Bet Online, a soft 5 now. Do we think this number ticks closer to 6? We think we see a trend closer to 4 as we get closer to Sunday kick?
Not really sure.
Looks like by all indications, I mean, it won't be a massive public play one way or the other. About 60% of the action coming in on the home favorite Chiefs, but I do think this will be.
I think there was work being done in an attempt to get 7, and someone kind of shot their load early.
Yeah, I don't think the market is going to give anyone looking to try and back the dog that potential opportunity. No. But as you mentioned, a game that'll go a long way in the AFC playoff picture, and I think that could be a fascinating watch, especially with some cold weather there. Into the late game session we go, with the New England Patriots on a short week, traveling out to the Rocky Mountains to take on the Denver Broncos. I'm sure the Patriots will have revenge on their mind for an AFC champ. What's up?
Double revenge
on their mind, excuse me, for an AFC championship game gone awry. We're looking at New England right now, a 3-point favorite, lay $1.20 on the road. Total has come down a tick from 45 on the high-end opener to 43.5. At Bet Online, you read Denver players' comments, you listen to Von Miller, they know this is it for their season. They have their backs against the wall. NFL history will be made that the remaining opponents on Denver's schedule all had a record of 10-3 to start the season. Not exactly what you're looking for when you try and cement your title defense and get back into the thick of things. I guess the biggest question I have for you here, Payne, can Denver do enough offensively, or is it going to be holding the Patriots to 14 points or less if they're going to get the win, let alone the cover?
That's certainly the big question. We talked about this a little bit earlier at the beginning of the show when we were breaking down New England, having the ability to both run and pass based on the opponent. Denver does not have that option. They cannot run the ball. And that's one thing, despite New England's defense being lackluster this season, they've been able to stop the run. You're going to need Trevor Siemian to play a fantastic game, attack the cornerbacks. That's kind of where New England's weak. You need to be able to stop the run. This feels like a blunt game. Just knowing Belichick, knowing Brady, knowing what they see on the All-22, kind of what I see on the All-22, this has got to be a run game, I would think, unless it's absolutely just stuffed in the first quarter and they open things up. We talked about these receivers. There's not a lot of them healthy. You talk about Chris Harris, Talib. Like, that's not going to be a great matchup for Edelman or Hogan. It's just not going to go very well. So that's your advantage there. I'm just going to make this very simple. At 3.5, I'm going to be on Denver. That's kind of what we're waiting for here.
Well, you mentioned some of the defensive players, and there is one key injury that Denver's dealing with, a status of a linebacker that we don't know
and
at time of recording.
He is key. He is key. Brandon Marshall is vital to the Broncos' defense. He might be. I shouldn't say this, but right now, when you look at their cornerbacks, Talib and Harris, they're obviously fantastic. You just throw them out there. They shut down the opponent. His passing game. But Brandon Marshall's kind of that cog in the middle that is absolutely needed. He's good in coverage. He helps in the run game. And we talk about that interior of the Broncos defense being a little soft. Marshall is absolutely needed. My feeling is he's not going to be 100%. He is going to be a gamer. And I would think he tries to give it a go. Something we're monitoring, obviously.
We are not
3.5. This is Denver's last stand.
What about the total? 43.5 at BetOnline right now.
Yeah, feels. I saw it open as high as 45. Now it's 43.5. I would probably agree with that trending pattern.
Yeah, you'd have to think if Denver has a shot in this game, it's going to be predicated on their defense and their ability to at least slow down New England. And you mentioned the Patriots probably having a desire to run the football. And it leads me to another question, Payne. I know we don't talk a ton of fantasy, but I think this game, when folks have New England players, like a Tom Brady, maybe a Julian Edelman or Mitchell, what's your thought process here in terms of trying to find other options, knowing how good this Denver defense is? Or do you take them I ask you quite honestly, because I know it's come up a number of times through my Twitter feed, do you take the mentality that you can't ditch the date you brought to the dance?
Yeah, it takes a lot for me to ditch her. Now, I am talking to a guy that has no qualms about benching.
I have no problems benching picks. Superstars. I have no problems benching superstars.
I know. Bench Zeke early on in the campaign. This is a tough spot. Now, matchups are everything, especially when it comes to fantasy football. You can have literally a middle of the pack or a bottom third tier quarterback with a fantastic matchup. Probably do a little bit better than Tom Brady this week. It's tough. But I think with quarterback, I'm a little bit more lenient on benching as opposed to, running backs. I don't even want to suggest anything because all the fantasy nerds will come at me because I'm not really a fantasy guy. But I would suggest, my feeling is probably a guy like Alex Smith is on your waiver wire. I can't believe I just said I would start Alex Smith over fucking Tom Brady. Something along those lines. You want to find a guy with a better matchup here, I would think.
Hey, you're talking to a guy who's got a tough decision himself. It's Matt Stafford against that Giants defense or Tyrod Taylor. I don't even think the decision's that tough. Tyrod, I trust.
Depends on the weather.
Semifinals.
Depends on the weather, but Tyrod's getting his last chance against that defense. Maybe runs one or two in for you.
Playing for contract status and maybe to keep the Ryan's brothers' jobs up there in Orchard Park, New York. Two coaches, though, Payne, who don't have any questions about job security. Going head-to-head in the Sunday night football game that was flexed a few weeks ago, where the Dallas Cowboys looked to bounce back from a one-game losing streak against the Tampa Bay Bucks. You're looking at Dallas, a 7-point home favorite right now, trending towards 6.5 as it's 7. Even at BetOnline, total here 47. We know the Bucs did us dirty a week ago. When we look at Tampa, resurgent defense for me and what I've seen over the last couple weeks, despite those wins, don't quite pass the sniff test. And of course, the big talk all week, Dak versus Romo, and have the Cowboys rookies potentially hit that rookie wall.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on here. The first being Tampa, public dog here. We talk about efficient markets all the time. 5 straight wins. Believe it's 5 straight covers. Tough for me to think there's value at this point, especially how bad Dallas looked on national TV. We have mentioned the Dak and Zeke potential regressions. We know what the college football season entails. It's winding down right now, and this is go time for the Cowboys. I know there was talks of bringing McFadden up this week, maybe to help Zeke a little bit. Looked like he was wearing down just a touch. I will say this. I agree with the Bucks' defensive improvements, and I watched a lot of the All-22 stuff. They're flying around. Their, like, hair is on fire. They're playing, like, 150%. Like, they're just kind of flying around. They're, like, all, you know, on the five-hour energy Adderall kick. Like, they are just everywhere. I will say this, though. Been a lot of turnovers. The beneficiary of a ton of turnovers, and we know those are going to subside a little bit. And when you break this game down, despite the defensive improvements the last month of the season, the Bucks are 24th in the NFL at stopping the run. They allow 4.3 yards per rush attempt. The last 3 weeks, even during this run, it's even worse. 4.6 yards allowed. They're dead last in the last 3 weeks, allowing 58% of runs to be successful. That's not what you want to see when the Cowboys and their offensive line and their ground game are going to be clicking, I think. So for me, I'm going to wait this one out, see where it goes. I would think at the very least, Dallas is going to be a team that I look to tease a bunch this week.
And this was a team that we talked about early before it was the cool thing to do. Everyone, oh, you have to keep Dak out there as your starter. As long as he's winning, you can't change the mojo. I think it's a little bit overblown. We know that Tony Romo is the better quarterback. I'm sure he would have had a ton of success had he been healthy right from the start of the season. And I asked this question, and I'm not sure I really should. Can we make the argument that Dallas, after their heater and their ability to cover numbers with an alarming success rate, now three failed attempts against the number, is Dallas starting to get into the undervalue territory because of all this narrative that's going on through the media, how Dak's regressing and this offense just doesn't appear capable to try and cover a price tag like what's being installed in them this week?
Tough to envision a team like the Cowboys being undervalued, especially at home. We talk about a spot where the opposing team really gets up to play at Jerry's World. They haven't been very successful since that stadium is built against the spread. So undervalued, probably not, but do I think this is a fantastic spot? I do.
One last thing before we close the book on this particular game. When we look at Tampa's offense matched up against the Cowboys' defense, how do you see that playing out?
Certainly a concern. I will tell you, since Doug Martin's been back, it's really allowed Jameis to find some other targets. The yards per pass play, up nearly 2 yards per pass play with Doug Martin in there. So he provides that multiple element for their offense, which helps things. We talked about this Cowboys defense, Rod Marinelli just working miracles. But when you look at a lot of the metrics, they're not very good. The one question on the other side of the ball, and I know you talked about this on Monday's podcast, was Dez Bryant looking to potentially have a breakout game here? Would he have 9 targets, 1 catch? And we've talked about this all the time with this Bucks defense. Look at their secondary.
Big physical wideouts.
Yes, they struggle with the big physical wideout. This feels like Dez could have a pretty nice game here. Williams could have a pretty nice game here. So it's going to be a very fun game to watch. I mean... You just don't know sometimes. You catch a team like the Bucks where they're young, they have a quarterback. That is the position that matters most. It masks so many issues. So if Jameis is taking that next step, it's going to be tough to even catch up after 4 or 5 weeks in the market. We could be in the midst of that. But I think for me, not sure I'm going to lay the 7. You know, if it got to a point where it was ridiculous and got to 5.5, probably look to lay the Cowboys there. But I think probably you're looking at soft 7, 6.5 in that area. And so I think the Cowboys are probably going to be, like I said, in a couple teasers for me.
Yeah, one thing for me too, and the longer you're in this business and you look at numbers, things kind of pop out. And you hate to say it's pattern recognition or anything along those lines, but betting trends, the way the market moves, this game for me feels eerily similar to what we saw a couple weeks ago, where the Steelers were about a 5.5, 6-point favorite number, got as high as 6.5. Playing host to the Giants, knowing what that game meant to them. I have to have the feeling and reading the player comments and quotes that Dallas now, they're not backed into a corner. They can't play the us against the world mentality. But a good spot, as you allude to try and look to back Dallas while everybody tries to jump off this bandwagon.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm going to wait this one out. I just want to see what the market does. There's one specific... clan, let's call them a clan. I was going to say posse, but man,
it carries a negative connotation. It becomes a dirty word with racial insinuations being made if you use the term posse.
Yes, I think Klan might be bad too. now that I said that out loud. Although Wu-Tang, fantastic rap group. They were a Klan. I will say a group. Let's just call them a group. I had a brain fart there. They have an infinity. They have a passion for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I could see them potentially playing them again this week. They have some market influence. I'm going to wait on that a little bit.
And I have spoken to a few books out here. They've told me that the worst-case scenario on Sunday night will actually be an outright victory for Tampa. They said they've seen a lot of public money coming in so far on the underdog, given Tampa's hot streak. The general public thinks they have a little opportunity, a little bit of value. They love to back Jameis Winston right now, and that's more or less what we're seeing. I know we didn't get a chance to cover a lot of the games on Sunday in greater detail. Payne wanted to focus on some with major playoff implications and the teams that we'll be talking about not only through the rest of the regular season, but on into the playoffs. Any other nuggets you think are worth sharing with the listeners for some of these secondary games?
There's not a ton out there. I'd probably be monitoring. I think you kind of broke it a little bit. The Jimmy Smith news, tough place to play. But Philadelphia at the right price, could make some sense there. I would think, the game that was the Sunday night game, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, maybe that has some value now that you get Andy Dalton on a prime time a little bit. That would pique my interest at the right price. So, not a ton out there. I've kind of been firing the board the last like 4 or 5 weeks. I'm definitely going to be attempting to tighten the card a little bit this week without question.
Get rid of that semi-automatic rifle and start going back to the sniper approach. And as always, on the Bet the Board podcast, as our listeners know, we'll of course be rooting for the Chargers to get us to that 7-win threshold. So we may not have a bet there, but we will be rooting for San Diego to win that football game outright. Let's leave it at that. And Payne, we go into the big game breakdown where we have not one but two games to talk about, including tonight's showdown between the Rams and Seahawks, along with Saturday night's tilt at MetLife Stadium. And as always, those games brought to you courtesy of the American Gaming Association. You can check out all the great work they're doing for ongoing legalization at americangaming.org. You can follow them on Twitter at Amer, A-M-E-R, Gaming, G-A-M-I-N-G-A-S-S-N. It is the mission of the AGA to be the single most effective champion of the industry, relentlessly protecting against harmful and often misinformed public policies and paving a path for growth, innovation, and reinvestment. Sign up for their newsletter, americangaming.org/about/contact. And let's start with the game Saturday night with your beloved Dolphins, Payne. And we've seen a lot of movement on this particular contest where Miami, a 2.5-point road favorite at BetOnline, number trending towards 2. Total in this game, 37.5. Matt Moore will make his first start, I think, since 2011. Bryce Petty back out there under center. The floor is yours, my good man.
I think this is one of the most interesting games of the entire week. I really do, and maybe I'm a little biased, and so I kind of want to start with this because it sounds like I have to after you kind of opened it for me. Not a homer. I am...
A homer wasn't a fair term to use there. We know you root for the Dolphins, but to your credit, you will bet against them when opportunity presents itself, but it's a franchise you'd like to see do well. Better?
Yeah. I mean, I bet against them last week. Yeah. I bet against them pretty frequently.
And we should have cashed that ticket if Carson Palmer could have thrown an incompletion on the two-point conversion, but I digress.
Yes. For me, I'm all about money. I'm very unbiased in pretty much everything I do. But I will say this. This game opened 3. It took sharp Jets money. I would expect this to trend closer to pick before it does 3. I've been telling you all along that this Dolphins team has overachieved, especially on defense. And now the metric since the Chargers game, the world's now seeing that. And this is a thin defense. I told you during our preview pod months ago.
Yeah, I didn't
listen. And now that thin defense, we are now entering week 15. They have spent more snaps on the field than any other team in the NFL. And it's not close. I'm looking at this right now. This defense for the Dolphins have spent roughly 9.5 more snaps per game on the field than their offense. The next closest, and this is shocking, the next closest is Chip Kelly's 49ers D. They've spent 7.5 more snaps per game than their offense, which is certainly an angle here for the Jets. And when you talk about internal things like Todd Bowles getting passed over. He was the intern in 2011, did a decent job, got kicked to the curb along with Casey Rogers, and they chose Philbin. This is certainly a game that, the Jets have had circled, specifically the coaching staff.
Yeah, and I mean, we saw the game between these two teams earlier in the season came down to the bitter end, a game that felt like a coin flip. And when we look at the Jets, they showed me a lot last week, and I know it was only the 49ers, but they got down 14-0. They could have quit yet again for the second week in a row. They battled back. We see a little bit of rapport coming between Bryce Petty and Robbie Anderson out there. What have you seen from Petty thus far on the All-22?
Nothing. He stinks. He's very bad. It's ugly. It's very bad. He's got a strong arm. He's somewhat mobile. He's a big, tall dude, can stand in the pocket. It was ugly last week. And aside from, I mean, they ran the ball fantastically. And that was part of why they had success late in that game. Yes, he found Robbie Anderson, chucked a bunch of balls to him, and he made great plays. And this was an interesting stat that I saw. Right now, the leading, I guess, percentage of targets. So quarterback drops back. They focus on a wide receiver. They throw it to that wide receiver. Right now, it's Jameis Winston to Mike Evans. He focuses on him 30% of all pass plays. Since Bryce Petty has taken over at quarterback, Robbie Anderson is seeing 31% of the passing targets. It's crazy. So there's clearly a nice rapport there. For me, though, and this is kind of where I'm going with this. Sharp money is going to be on the Jets. Looking at all this, I'm just telling you that's where it's going to go. I am not going to be on that. I think there's this sentiment out there that Matt Moore stinks. They think about him potentially as what they saw with Carolina. I can tell you this, though. When you look at this, before Gase got there, there were guys in that Dolphins locker room, players, coaches, they were like clamoring for Matt Moore. He is like California cool, nothing bothers him, gunslinger mentality. He was the better deep passer at the time than Tannehill. And I think you mentioned this, Todd. You said 2011 was the last time we saw Matt Moore get significant reps. His coach was Tony Sparano. He got shit canned. Interestingly enough, the interim that took over was Todd Bowles. Neither of those guys can spell offense. In that season, Moore started 13 games, 18 total touchdowns, 9 interceptions, completed 61% of his passes, had an 87 passer rating. Since that time, 5 seasons, he's only thrown 35 passes. But he's a capable passer. The arm is there. He came in cold off the bench in weather last week, takes a shot in the chin, delivers a dime to Stills late in that game. And if you listen to anybody or read anything Miami Dolphins related, Adam Gase is about the most confident guy you're ever going to hear. Matt Moore is about the most confident guy you're ever going to hear. They feel extremely confident, and I'm not really sure this is about Matt Moore. I think this is about Adam Gase. He's been labeled the QB whisperer. Adam Gase, just think about this, has won a playoff game in 2011 against, at that time, the 7th most efficient defense that season in the Pittsburgh Steelers. And he did it with a quarterback that was like clipping Filipino boys' genitals in the offseason. And now he's like an instructional league baseball player. He reined in Jay Cutler a season ago. Cutler had his highest passer rating as an NFL quarterback last season. He was a plus 10 TD to interception ratio last season. Another career high. When you talk about the Chicago Bears, what they were with Adam Gase last year, they were the 10th most efficient offense and had the 2nd toughest opponent scheduled defenses. Adam Gase leaves. What are they this year? They are 21st in offensive efficiency, and they've faced the 28th toughest slate of defenses. Adam Gase has really just, it's a complete culture change. And so for me, I think this has a lot to do with Adam Gase. I'm not on the Jets this week, and that is going to be the sharp side.
We've done this podcast, Payne, for almost 3 seasons, and if there was a phrase that I never thought would get uttered on here, it was going to be Filipino boys' genitals. So congratulations and kudos to you for somehow getting that into an NFL podcast. You mentioned the sharp money and where it's going to go. How low can this total go?
This is the other thing, and when we talk about the weather, I was kind of waiting for this one. If you're looking Thursday morning for the 8 p.m. kick Saturday. Right now, as I speak, and again, this is fluid. It could change 3 minutes from now. It's weather. It's 45 degrees. It's 15% chance of snow. It's less than 6 mile per hour wind. It's for New York in December. That's goddamn balmy. It's short weather. I think you're going to see stuff on TV. And again, this is going to completely, you know, it's going to change. Every single weather thing's going to change. It's literally what we do from like Thursday, Wednesday to like Sunday. We're checking the weather like 10 different places on the hour every hour. But right now, that's what the projected weather is. It's supposed to be worse, as we alluded to, Sunday at 1 p.m. than it is Saturday at 8 p.m.
We'll see. You mentioned the Bryce Petty-Robbie Anderson connection. Doesn't quite have the same ring to it as Jameis Winston to Mike Evans.
Potential for Kiko Alonso coming back. There's whispers. They don't want to rush him back. They probably won't rush him back. There was whispers potentially Xavien Howard coming back for that defense as well. So some key guys coming back for the Dolphins defense as well.
Big week for Matt Moore, though. He's going to want for his newborn son that came to him on Monday. He's going to want to win one for him.
That was a big thing, though. People were talking about that could be like, you know, a thing, a distraction. I'll tell you this, like Matt Moore, he's just like, he's that dude that just doesn't care. Like you could probably run over his foot and he's going to be like, cool, bro. So him having a kid, it was actually over the weekend. I was told he was the first one at the facility Monday. So non-factor to me.
Be interesting to try and see exactly, as you mentioned, where this number closes. We saw it a couple weeks ago with the Jets. Sharp money came in on them. They closed the favorite against the Colts, lost that game by 400 points. We know what's at stake for the Miami Dolphins. Probably need a few things to happen if they're going to be playoff relevant, but expect the Fins on a short week to bring their best efforts in a divisional rivalry. In a rivalry tonight between the Seahawks and Rams, obviously it's taken on a much different tenor than the first time we saw these two teams meet, where Seattle came up on the short end of the stick against the Rams, losing 9-3. The Seahawks, an overwhelming 16-point favorite today at BetOnline. Total in this game, 39. Seattle off that pathetic performance against Green Bay. The Rams off a pathetic performance every single week. And interim coach John Fossil makes his debut after Jeff Fisher was sent to the breadline.
The breadline. I like that.
He can buy an awful lot of bread, though, without that extension and the money he was guaranteed. He doesn't get me to play my little violin for him. I know losing your job is never easy, but you have millions upon millions upon millions in the bank. You're not going to get my sympathy.
Now, here's the question. Do you think he went to the owner and was like, listen, if you're going to fire me at the end of the season, just fire me now so I don't become like the all-time losingest NFL coach ever?
I mean, I think it was a sense of pride. If the Rams don't want to go down in the history book that they employed the coach that broke the record to be the most losingest coach.
So
I think
is, Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's now tied with Dan Reeves, right, at 165 career losses.
Yep.
So, you know, that Rams, that gold and blue, there's a lot of pride with Rams colors. They don't want to have the losingest head coach grab that mantra and mantle, so to speak, while he's dancing up and down the Coliseum sidelines.
I will say this, and we talked about this over the phone couple days ago, and I don't ever talk poorly about sports books, but 13 was a bad open. In general, bad open should have been 15.5. That's where my numbers make it, and I think my numbers are kind of good in the NFL.
I would say the numbers there are pretty good.
Yeah, but time and situation is kind of like life and football in general. And you have a standalone revenge game with a rookie QB that just lost at home 42-14. It's going to be like a tough to get a ticket on the Rams. I would have opened this 16, let the market kind of guide me where I needed to be, whether that was back down to 14 or up to three scores at 17. I will tell you this, there are going to be a contingence of like this group, like a clan of math guys that are
again,
going
again,
to...
Again with a clan reference.
A clan, yes. A clan of math guys. A group of math guys that are going to say, this total is 39, I'm getting 16, I'm going to do this blindly every single time because the math dictates you to do that. In fact, the math dictates you to play a correlated parlay here and go, you know, under and take the points. But because they're doing that, it's signaling low variance game. And to me, when you look at Jared Goff and the mistakes he's made, I think it takes away from the low variance game. I really do. His four starts, I mean, he hasn't played a defense that's currently ranked in the top half of defensive efficiency metrics. Not
he made
one.
He made the Falcons look like the 85 Bears last week.
And the Falcons right now are 27th in defensive efficiency, and they're without their top corner. He is not very good right now. And when you have a team that is looking for revenge, that got embarrassed last week, and now they're on national TV, this is my issue with potentially gravitating towards Los Angeles or gravitating towards the under, because what should be a low variance game is no longer one with Jared Goff. When he's going to throw you one, he's going to give them opportunities. They're going to have opportunities tonight to pick off at least two balls. Now the question is, do they make the play and does it get returned for touchdowns? I will say this though, when you look at this game, one team that has had success against Seattle is Los Angeles, and we talked about why. When you talk about Seattle's offensive line, we know that's a weakness. The strength for Los Angeles is that defensive line. I believe the Rams have won 4 out of 5 straight up in this series, and it's because of that matchup right there. They are without Quinn, I believe, this evening on the defensive end side of the ball, so that could be a tough loss. I'm just not quite sure. We talk about this all the time. When you get a coach fired, usually that next game is your you play with your hair on fire. I don't see it.
Yeah, I just don't know if there's a whole lot of fight left in the Rams. And you mentioned Seattle. Not only do they have revenge, I mean, they were absolutely embarrassed on Sunday against the Packers. Short week, you have Richard Sherman coming out. We know that the Rams aren't going to win this game. 16 is a massive number in the National Football League. I think the one thing that surprised me thus far, Payne, is in terms of betting trends, that it's not overwhelming public support for Seattle in this particular spot. So that was very sharp money, as you allude to, that laid the 13.5. They laid the 14 with the home favorite here. It's about a 60-40 split, whereas, you know, typically for these games, the way the Rams have been ill-equipped to try and attract two-way action for any of their football games, you know, but part of me thought we might have seen a 70-30, a 75-25 type betting breakdown.
This is the perfect number. This is the perfect number. 15.5, 16, throw it in that area. Figure out where you need to go from there. 13 was very, very bad. Very bad. So
you're not going to come on the podcast advocating that folks should lay $12 to make $1 on the Seahawks money line at BetOnline?
I don't know. I will say this. I will not be invested in this game. There is going to be some math guys that are on the Rams. There's already been one second-tier group math-predicated. They didn't get a very good number. They took 15 like 2 days ago. I just can't do it.
Come on now. I know you're itching to bet the Rams plus 10 in the first half, under 20, a little correlated parlay to get you to the window and just hope that clock keeps ticking.
Yeah, can't do it. Can't do it.
Yeah, not exactly the most attractive Thursday night.
I know you were trying to con me into a bet for our loyal listeners.
No, I'm not trying to con anybody into a bet for this game, because I think knowing what's at stake and how much college football is on the horizon, what NFL games are there, this would be a Thursday night that might be better equipped for date night than it is to spend 3 hours watching this garbage with a neon lime green color rush ensemble that the Seahawks are going to put together for us.
This is good. You pitch it to the lady friend that, listen, babe, it's holiday time. It's Thursday night NFL. I'm willing to hang out with you. I'm willing to hang out with you.
Got 10 days before Christmas and all the shopping and everything else that you people that celebrate the holiday have to do.
You people.
You people, exactly. You people.
That might be worse than any clan that I've mentioned this entire podcast.
Sorry, would you prefer if I used, I'm trying to think of word choices here, but I'm
folks that celebrate Christmas? I just said holidays. Like, I'm being nice to
your
people.
Yeah, all right, we'll go folks that celebrate Christmas. I mean, although you've told me the millennial thing to do down in South Florida is people are buying Hanukkah bushes to put there, which...
No. This is kind of the thing. So in South Florida, there's obviously a large contingency of Furmans.
That's actually not true. They're called Jews. They're not called Furmans.
I wasn't going to say, I can't use that word.
It's not a dirty word.
It's not?
No, it's a religious group of an ethnic identity.
Okay, so this religious group, they flock towards like South Florida and Del Boca Vista and all those areas. So anyways, when you would grow up and you were in like high school, you would be dating a lot of Jewish women.
Were you big when you were dating in the Jewish community? Were you big? Were you welcomed into those Jewish homes?
At that time, it's certainly gotten a little more clickier as we've gotten older.
All right, I just wanted to check.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if you were big amongst the Jewish female circuit dating scene down there in South
Florida. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. But over the time I've seen, and I see like friends post all the time, they go double. Is it a menorah? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, that is very, very good.
And a Christmas tree. It's both. So it's not so much.
I don't understand that at all.
Because you're stubborn.
You either celebrate the holiday or you don't celebrate the holiday. Now, my sister is in an interfaith marriage. So, I mean, they do have a Christmas tree. They celebrate the holiday.
Oh, so this is normal.
Well, I mean,
might not be up to your high standards, but this is normal.
No.
This is what I was telling you.
I was saying if two Jews are married, you don't get a goddamn Christmas tree is what I'm saying.
Now, if you're married outside the faith,
that's a different story then.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, you're proactive and actively searching out a member of your tribe as opposed to just saying, hey, if I meet a lovely lady and I fall in love with her.
I mean, I think there are some potential complications that come if you want to be adherent of a particular faith when it comes to raising children. And these are philosophical discussions, which may be a pretty heavy topic for the Bet the Board podcast. But we like to be diverse. We like to, go outside the comfort zone from time to time. But I thought you were referring more to people that decide they want to have a Christmas tree, yet they only celebrate Hanukkah because both parents are, Jewish.
Nope. Covering all grounds. Use the word holiday.
Holiday.
So anyways, back to the point at hand here. This is a perfect game to say, listen, I'm going to sacrifice the Thursday night NFL game. Let's go hang out. Let's get dinner. Let's get movie. Let's shop a little bit. Let's do our thing here. And you're going to gain major kudos, some major brownie points.
Yeah, and it's not often that we advocate you skipping an NFL game, especially one in prime time. But I'll be honest here, Payne, I don't think I'm going to learn a whole heck of a lot about either team in tonight's game. Maybe Goff looks good for a drive or two, and we can see some upside for the Rams in the remaining two games, but I don't think Seattle's loss to Green Bay shows that there's kinks in the armor. They'll address the Earl Thomas absence, and we'll still be talking about Seattle, very much a threat to win the NFC when all the dust settles.
Who are the Rams hiring?
You know what? I was going to ask you that. We've talked a lot about Kyle Shanahan being considered for these jobs, if you believe some of the rumblings that are out there. I think it's got to be an offensive guy. I think you need someone that can develop Jared Goff and see if he is going to be your franchise quarterback. We saw what the Bucks did going with Dirk Cutter because of the relationship he had with Jameis Winston. I'll put Josh McDaniels up there as a guy that'll get strong consideration. I've seen a lot of folks talk about David Shaw. I think that'd be a mistake. I don't think he's the kind of flash and dash you need to bring there. I don't believe Gruden. We know Harbaugh came out and denounced some of the rumors. I guess Shanahan or McDaniels, maybe, and I don't want to say Sean Payton leaves New Orleans to come out there. I mean, who are some of the guys you're hearing in your circle?
Sean Payton makes some sense. I think they will definitely dial up Gruden. I don't believe...
Does Gruden leave his post Monday Night Football? Does he really want to get back into coaching? He's got a great gig right now.
You didn't let me finish. This is kind of the thing here. I'm not sure it would be in a coaching capacity. I think they would offer him a executive vice president role. They would let him be in charge of some personnel stuff. He would obviously help groom the quarterback position, find a coach that would help groom the quarterback position. Without question, I feel like this needs to be an offensive-minded coach when you look at having Goff, trying to salvage Goff, having Gurley. It has to be an offensive-minded coach, and I'd probably lean Shanahan. I'm shocked the old one's out of the NFL, but the young one, it would be a dynamic duo if you could land Gruden in some type of executive role, and then he brings in Shanahan.
And I feel like Les Snead's got to be gone as well.
It's only a matter of time. I think there's major house cleaning going on there.
The one other name that I thought was interesting, read an article, and obviously speculation, I don't see it happening. Would the Rams consider putting in a call and trying to throw the kitchen sink at Pete Carroll to get him back to Southern California?
I think he's got a... I mean, I know I was told that he still lives out there. He doesn't really live in Seattle. He's got an apartment in season, but is out of Dodge pretty quickly when season concludes. So I don't know if... I don't know if you can get him there. I will say this. Money is not going to be an issue, clearly.
Oh, crap. He's got to make a splash. He's got to bring somebody in. No, he's going to make a commitment to him because I have to think whoever they bring on as head coach this offseason will be the guy that ushers the Rams into that billion-dollar, beautiful, state-of-the-art facility.
That could be the problem where they don't go to a guy like Shanahan, young Shanahan, I should say, and they bring in a name. So the Sean Payton thing is very interesting with Breeze getting up there in age. The one thing I will say, though, Sean Payton's going to want full control. And I'm not sure the Rams are going to want to give that to him because they've kind of just gone through that. So that will be an interesting dynamic where you have lots of egos involved there in potentially attempting to bring Sean Payton in.
Yeah, you hear all the time when it comes to L.A., you have to be interesting. Even if you're bad, at least if you're interesting, it gets eyeballs there. But if you look at the sports hierarchy for what's taking place, the Rams so far down in the pecking order behind the Lakers, behind the Clippers. I was going to throw hockey teams in there, but we know that that doesn't play a role. But the Dodgers, USC, it is a tough sell and a tough ticket in that town. And when you look on TV and watch that game last week against the Falcons and the stadium is half empty after halftime, you're going to need to do something to try and get the Rams headed in the right direction. The nice part for them is they do have some pieces to build around in the form of Todd Gurley, a potential franchise quarterback, and arguably the best defensive lineman in the entire sport.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The key, though, got to have a quarterback in the NFL. That's point blank, period. We see that the Colts are competitive because of one man. That literally is a 1-2 win football team. A good quarterback can mask a lot of issues. And right now, Goff just, you know, you got to see what you have there. You've invested so much and you gave up boatloads to get him. I don't think you can throw in the towel quite yet.
No, I think he's going to be given a longer leash. I mean, I don't want to quite say that it's the same scenario unfolding in L.A. that we're seeing in Jacksonville with Bortles, but you're going to have to give him adequate time to adjust from the spread offense he ran at Cal under Sonny Dykes to a more NFL-type set. The offensive line, they're not doing any service, but it'll be interesting to see the work Goff puts in this offseason to take that next step in his development. But we digress. Either way, a game not worth betting from Bet the Board. As far as an official endorsement for a play, you're just going to have to check out the Bet the Board website at bettheboardpodcast.com. Something will be up there Sunday morning well in advance of kickoff. You can follow Bet the Board Pod on Twitter. Sign up for the newsletter. You'll get all sorts of alerts about when podcasts drop. Some bowl betting tips article up there for folks that want to jump into the college football end with both feet come Saturday and some second-tier bowl games. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. You can follow me there as well at Todd Furman. Hopefully come Monday, my voice will be back in full. Although, Payne, maybe folks like hearing me at about 75% since we know you're the one that brings home the bacon on this podcast.
Yeah, let's just wrap this thing up. I think everyone concurs with those sentiments.
Yeah, I don't think
I got to go see a movie.
Yeah, you got to get cracking. I mean, we'll get this podcast up. You'll go see the movie. We'll be able to review Manchester by the Sea. So for Payne Insider, special thanks to Dave Mason, who joins us every Thursday. I am Todd Furman. Best of luck with your NFL selections Thursday, Saturday, Sunday games. We'll be right back here with you on Monday to preview the showdown between Carolina and Washington. But in the meantime, hopefully we'll see you at the window.